from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Show World headquarters in Santa Monica, where I've realized this show has one real mission, one true mission. You know, it's been 28 years now. We haven't put out a mission statement. So I thought it was about time. The mission of this program is, once and for all, to separate traffic and weather. They have no business being together. They have nothing in common. So I will rest happy when traffic and weather are no longer together. Now, a little update on a story I shared with you way back in, I don't know, April or May, about an ill-starred, that's a nice way of putting it, trip that I tried to take to Medford, Oregon. I put myself in the hands of Horizon Air. And remember, as I said back at the time, you can't be horizontal without Horizon. The plane took off from LAX, got two-thirds of the way to Medford. They swore they'd land in Portland if anything was wrong in Medford. They didn't. They turned around, didn't stop in San Francisco, came all the way back to Los Angeles. At which point, you know, this was the last flight of the night. So my friend and I said, yeah, thanks. We'll go in the morning on United. Thank you. So they refunded the plane fare, but not the fee for my bag. Like, my bag had gotten to Medford. No, it didn't. It didn't get anywhere farther than I did. I got a refund. My bag didn't. It's, what, 6 months, 4 months, 5 months? Who's counting? Horizon is. Later, still no refund. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'll give 10 times the amount of the bag fee to Horizon's favorite charity if they refund the money. It's just wrong, you see. And I have a radio show. So I'm waiting to hear from the good people at Horizon, the root of the thieving magpie. You know my number. Maybe you don't. Speaking of travel, thanks to the people in Boise, Idaho, particularly, and also Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for great receptions and the final Q&As of the Big Uneasy Marathon Tour. But particularly Boise, just because it's so hard to fly there. It really is. And they made me feel so welcome that it was worthwhile going through all the... Well, the aforementioned United, which, flying out of Chicago, thoughtfully said on the itinerary, the flight to Boise will be departing from Terminal 1. So, of course, that's where I arrive, to see an unmanned kiosk with a computer-typed note taped to it saying, oh, passengers with bags to Boise have to go to Terminal 2, which meant, of course, I missed my flight. Thank you, United Airlines. So very, very much. You know, it's glamorous, this air travel thing. Ladies and gentlemen, haven't heard much about the dog trainer, the Los Angeles dog trainer lately, but this is pretty good. And I also don't normally share with you plaintiff's arguments in a lawsuit, but I'm going to make an exception. The former publisher of the Los Angeles Times Magazine, they had one of those, claims the Tribune Company, which owns the Times, fired and defamed him for objecting to the Times' decision to save money by stopping distribution of its Sunday magazine to low-income and minority neighborhoods while charging them the same price as the white affluent subscribers. Stephen Geldman sued the Tribune Company, LA Times, and the Times' senior vice president for advertising and targeted media, alleging blah, blah, blah. He demands some money. He began working for the defendants in July 2009 as publisher of the Times Sunday magazine. Shortly after plaintiff began working there, he began receiving complaints from customers about defendants' discriminatory distribution of the LA Times magazine. Defendants made the decision to eliminate distribution of the magazine to lower income and demographically minority neighborhoods such as Highland Park and Compton. Yo, Compton! Although the minority subscribers in these zip codes were not receiving the LA Times magazine, they were still paying the same subscription rate. Further, defendants continue to distribute the Los Angeles Times magazine in the Sunday paper in the white affluent neighborhoods. Gelman says he brought these complaints directly to his district manager, who was not named as a defendant. John T. O'Loughlin dismissed the complaints, telling him they had quote, a story for this, and questioning the importance of the complaints, unquote. Accusations of the Tribune Company abandoning minority neighborhoods are not new. In Chicago, the Trib has long been accused of ignoring downtown news, ceding that area to its competitor in pursuit of better demographics in the affluent suburbs. Imagine, ladies and gentlemen, somebody complaining about not getting the LA Times magazine. Hello, welcome to the show. I think it's in Sunland. From the home of the homeless and the edge of America, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Now, news about News Corp, nice people doing nice things. A prominent group of U.S. banks and investment funds with substantial investments in News Corp has issued a fresh legal complaint this week, accusing the company of widespread corporate misconduct extending far beyond the phone hacking excesses of the shuttered tabloid in England, the News of the World. The legal action lodged in the Delaware courts, you know why. Did I ever tell you about being in Wilmington? Speaking of Delaware, dozens of 50, 60-story tall buildings, all with names of banks you'd recognize, not a soul. Not a soul in the streets. It's like midday. It's like, I guess those buildings are all automated. Anyway, the legal action in the Delaware courts is led by, I guess all they do in those buildings is just some kid comes in and takes the money that's coming in and sends it right to the Caymans, as David K. Johnson suggested a couple of months ago. The legal action is led by Amalgamated Bank, a New York bank that manages $12 billion on behalf of institutional investors, holds about 1 million shares of News Corp. The lawsuit is aimed against the members of News Corp's board, including Rupert Murdoch himself, his son James, and Lachlan, and the media empire's chief operating officer, Chase Carey. In the complaint, the shareholders accused the board of allowing Murdoch to use News Corp as, quote, his own personal fiefdom. That would mean he would be the fief. Stop thief! In addition to the phone hacking scandal at the News of the World, the complaint focused on the controversial business tactics of two News Corp subsidiaries here in the United States. News America Marketing, which does advertising and marketing in supermarkets, among other places, and a manufacturer of satellite TV smart cards called NDS Group. The shareholders alleged the two companies were accused by multiple parties of, quote, stealing computer technology, hacking into business plans and computers, and violating the law through a wide range of anti-competitive behavior. The complaint draws on several lawsuits and trial transcripts in which News Corp subsidiaries were prosecuted by rival businesses. Well, they were sued. Businesses can't prosecute now. For alleged misconduct. In one case, News America, the company reached settlements with three separate competitors amounting to $650 million. Really? I don't think they have that kind of money. I'm going to check on that. My sources indicate they don't. Where my sources are. The mother of a victim of the 2005 London terrorist attacks is also suing Rupert Murdoch's media empire. Hey, I want to be Rupert's lawyer right about now. Man, you don't get bored. After she was told by police that her son's mobile phone is likely to have been targeted by a private investigator working for that shuttered tabloid, the News of the World. Sheila Henry filed a suit this week against News Group Newspapers, alleging that journalists at the tabloid hacked into a mobile phone belonging to Christian Small, 28 years old, on the day he was killed by a bomb blast in the London Underground. She left messages on her son's phone on the day of the attacks. In common with many of the victims, Small was missing for some time after the bomb blast. His family was trying to discover where he was. The company's UK subsidiary told the High Court this week it had found tens of thousands of extra emails that could potentially shed light on the extent of phone hacking at the tabloid, which, quote, the current management were unaware of, unquote. There are many ways to be unaware. One is to not ask. They're understood to include correspondence between reporters and senior managers at two Murdoch-owned tabloids, the News of the World closed, and the Sun still in biz. There's some significant material, says the judge overseeing the case. I'm sure there's lots more to come. Me too. Nice people doing nice things. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Well, last week or week before, we learned about Tony Blair's association with the Murdoch family via being a godfather to Rupert's new daughters. New. Now comes this from the Telegraph in London. New questions over Tony Blair's ties to Colonel Muammar Gaddafi and his role in the release of the Lockerbie bomber have emerged from documents discovered in Tripoli. Letters and emails show Blair held secret talks with Gaddafi in the months before Abdelbaset al-Megrahi was freed from jail. Blair was flown to Libya twice at Gaddafi's expense on one of the former dictator's private jets, June 2008 and April 2009, when Libya was threatening to cut all business links if Megrahi stayed in jail. The disclosure of the meetings, which Blair makes no mention in his numerous yaks, prompted calls by relatives of Lockerbie victims for Blair to make public all of his dealings with Gaddafi and his regime. Blair even brought an American billionaire to one of the meetings. Sources say the financier was asked by Gaddafi for help in building beach resorts on the Libyan coast. In the correspondence, Blair's private office refers to Gaddafi deferentially as the leader. The meetings took place at a time of intense negotiations with Gaddafi's regime over the release of Megrahi, convicted of murdering 270 people in the biggest terrorist atrocity committed in Britain. The bomber was finally released 2 years ago after doctors wrongly gave him just 3 months to live. He's still alive. Blair has always denied involvement in Megrahi's release. Blair has refused to make public the full extent of his meetings in Libya since leaving office. The emails and letters raised concern over possible conflicts of interest regarding his varied roles as Middle East peace envoy. That's worked out nicely. Philanthropist and business consultant. Blair has made a fortune since leaving office through speaking engagements and consultancy deals largely set up in the Middle East. His personal wealth is estimated anywhere between $40 and $100 million. He's also paid about $3 million a year by J.P. Morgan, which has a number of business interests in Libya. Isn't that nutty? So if he's connected to Murdoch and connected to Gaddafi, what's that game people play? I forget. Six what of what? We'll see. We'll see. Oh, yeah. So this pair of stories, also from outside the bubble, just shows what happens when you hitch your wagon to the wrong star. First, from The Guardian. When rioters went on the rampage last month in London, the chain that suffered some of the worst damage was a sporting goods chain called JD Sports. More than 30 of its stores were targeted. But the riots affected a broad range of businesses. JD Sports became the enduring image of the devastation. It was targeted because it seemed to embody, quote, youth culture. It has clearly positioned itself as a purveyor of very aspirational product amongst the youth. Branding experts are warning the riots are a wake-up call for fashion brands that chain stocks. They have cultivated a gangster chic image and found themselves targeted by looters across the country. Mark Morkowski, a PR and branding expert, said that image was now coming back to haunt them. The riots, he says, are an absolute disaster for a number of brands. From the day the newspapers used a picture of a hoodie equipped completely in Adidas, it has become a massive crisis. It has become a wake-up call for many brands which have spent millions developing gangster chic and danger wear images. This is a new one. Danger wear. Brands have been aligning themselves with gang and criminal culture for decades, but ramped up their association with less clean-cut figures in recent years. Adidas is launching an advertising campaign featuring rapper, gang member, and convicted criminal Snoop Dogg. It also stars fellow U.S. rapper Big Sean, charged with sexual assault last month. Earlier, Levi's withdrew an advertising campaign that featured a young man squaring up to a line of riot police after a public outcry that it glorified riots. The advertisement ended with the words, quote, go forth. And, also from The Guardian, Lacoste, the French fashion label known by its green crocodile logo, is reported to have asked the authorities in Norway to prevent Anders Behring Breivik from wearing its brand. The right-wing extremist who's admitted killing 77 people during bomb and gun attacks in July has been pictured wearing Lacoste items since he was arrested. Finally, from The Independent, just because you're not scared enough. Any serious oil spill in the ice of the Arctic, the new frontier for oil exploration, is likely to be an uncontrollable environmental disaster, despoiling vast areas of the world's most untouched ecosystems. Now, I think I mentioned this last week, so finally is finally. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. I ought to listen to this show. I'd keep better track of this stuff. News from outside the bubble, as I say, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the magic word at this point in time would appear to be jobs. You might wonder at the timing of all this. It being 2.5, 3 years into a serious downturn in the economy. But both political parties, I guess, have exhausted deficit and other hot topics and have finally come around to jobs. The Republicans first, with the clever bit of framing of describing corporations as job creators. Like, that's what they do. They sit around every morning going, boy, I can think of a good job. Let's create that one. Yeah, that's good. job creators. You might as well describe corporations as waste disposers, because they do that too. It's not what their business is built on, but they do that every day. We need to protect the waste disposers. Doesn't sound as good. Really what they are is limited liability profit makers, but I guess that didn't test as well. Anyway, President Obama has picked up the semantic mantle, or the semantle, and now has this new jobs bill. And because he's been criticized for not fighting hard enough, he's donned a fighting guise, which consists apparently of saying a certain phrase as often as possible. This is him from his speech in Congress where he introduced the bill.
Pass right away. Pass this jobs plan. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill. You should pass it right away. Pass this jobs bill. Pass it. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs plan. You should pass it, which is why you should pass this bill right away.
Hypothetical mini theater. How life would be if life were different. Act 1. If Barack Obama were a hospital emergency room surgeon.
Ready with the anesthesia?
Well, we won't be needing that.
But...
Mr. Gethers?
Yes, doctor.
You hear me okay?
Yes, doctor. What are you going to do about my kidney stone?
Well, it's not what I'm going to do. I want you to pass that stone. You should do it, and you should do it right now. Nurse?
Yes, doctor.
I'll be in the lounge.
Hypothetical mini theater. Life subjunctified.
bananeira sem não, e a maneira de ver, e a bananeira não sei. Eu sei lá, e a bananeira sem não, isso é lá com você. Bananeira não sei, bananeira sei lá, e bananeira sem não, e a maneira de ver, e a bananeira não sei. Eu sei lá, e a bananeira não sei, isso é lá com você.
This is Le Show, and following up, as one must, on the big oil splch in the Gulf last year, the official U.S. government report has come out and basically blames BP, a little blame for Transocean and Halliburton, but mainly BP. And then this week, the Associated Press says a BP scientist has identified a previously unreported deposit of flammable gas, that could have played a role in that spill. BP failed to divulge the finding to government investigators for at least a year, according to interviews and documents obtained by the AP. Engineering experts differ on the extent to which the two-foot-wide swath of gas-bearing sands helped cause the disaster, but the finding raises the specter of further legal and financial troubles for BP. It could also raise the stakes in the battle between BP, Transocean, and Halliburton. Sorry, Dick, I forgot the name of your ex-company for a minute. News of the godly, a Wexford, Ireland priest has said that the wives and mothers of those sexually abused by clergymen are implicated in the cover-up. Wives and mothers had, quote, failed miserably to deal with the abuse of their children by clergy, he says. In the article in the Irish Catholic newspaper, Father Paddy Banville writes that Irish society did not want to accept the politically incorrect truth. A multitude of people are implicated in this cover-up. I believe it is a significant percentage of the population. He's talking about Ireland. Nobody in this once sovereign democratic republic wants to hear this, he wrote. Wives and mothers of Ireland, not exclusively wives and mothers, but far too many who failed miserably to deal with the abuse of their children by other family members. In time, I believe Ireland will discover there's nothing particularly unique in the Catholic bishops' bungling attempts to deal with clerical abuse. In fact, I believe that covering up is a typical response to child abuse right across the board, at least until very recently. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. And for those who still wonder how this thing went, how this economic thing went so totally off the rails, because there's so many contrary ideologically based opinions about it. Here's somebody who, I guess, is dealing in facts. He's the bankruptcy trustee in the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, which, of course, triggered about 3 years ago, right about now, triggered this whole thing. Anton Valukas, the bankruptcy trustee of Lehman Brothers, quote, and I said Lehman and Lehman, of course, just to hedge my bets. Quote, we found that Lehman was significantly and persistently in excess of its own risk limits. Lehman management decided to disregard the guidance provided by Lehman's risk management systems. Rather than adjust business decisions to adapt to risk limit excesses, management decided to adjust the risk limits to adapt to business goals. We found that the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, was aware of these excesses and simply acquiesced. An appropriate governance plan was in place to set risk limits. Management did not observe the limits. Lehman also had in place a single transaction limit framework to limit the size of individual transactions as a risk control. But in late 2006, Lehman management made the affirmative decision to disregard that single transaction limit because it had cost Lehman significant profit-making opportunities. As a result, Lehman committed to and closed dozens of transactions that were vastly in excess of that business unit's risk limits. The kind of management that works least well in this country, ladies and gentlemen, we're learning every day, is risk management. And now,
hypothetical mini theater. How life would be if life were different. Act 2. If Barack Obama were a high school civics teacher.
All right. Now, I let you guys kind of slide on the review for the test, right?
Mm-hmm. Say so.
Okay. Now, it's time for you to do something for me. Kenny, I bought off.
But...
off. Now, young folks, I want you to pass this test. And I want you to do it before 3 o'clock. Okay?
Oh, man.
Pass this test. Now, I'll be in the teacher's lounge.
Hypothetical mini theater. Life subjunctivized.
The Corps of Engineers had its beginning on the 16th of June, 1775, the eve of the Battle of Bunker Hill. From this small beginning, the Corps has grown to be the world's largest engineering organization. Early in its history, the Corps adopted as its motto, Essayons, or Let Us Try. Living up to this motto has become a Corps tradition. Most are familiar with the wartime accomplishments of the Corps, but few realize the extent of the Corps' peacetime contributions to the development of our nation. In recognition of these contributions, Congress has directed the Chief of Engineers to tell this story as a part of the nation's bicentennial celebration. A song has been specially composed to express in music the Corps' attitude toward the development of our nation. Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide, to beautify our countryside. We offer you our hand. Let us try. Can help to make things grow, help to make the waters flow, to save our precious land. Let us try to help preserve our natural treasures. Try is to succeed. Let us try, we'll do our share. Just ask us now and we'll be there to build a better world. Let us try.
Your tax money paid for that. I thought you should hear it. Speaking of the Corps of Engineers, the federal government wants the city of Dallas to repay $15 million that it sent by mistake years ago. The money from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was for Trinity River levee flood control work reviewed by it. We provided the city cash when we weren't authorized to do so, says the commander of the Corps' Fort Worth District. The city has already spent $8 million of that cash buying land for future levee expansion. They're going to need it because the Corps told the city 2 years ago the Trinity River levees, these things happen, were built on sand. A briefing delivered to the Dallas City Council laid out a 5-year repayment plan the city negotiated with officials. The city is facing, though, an extremely difficult budget, what else is new, and may have to borrow $8 million with interest in a future bond issue to pay back the Corps. I would use the word outrageous, said a former city council person. There's no question we did what we were supposed to do with the money and that they sent us the money knowing that they were sending us the money, so it really makes no sense. The council members also heard a briefing detailing the additional work the Corps now insists Dallas must perform to make the levee safe under rules that became more stringent following the levee failures in New Orleans. Dallas officials said they'd always received good marks from the Corps on the condition of the levees in the past. One of the constant frustrations is the rules change. Without knowing it, you have to go back and make up something that when you did it, you obeyed the rules, that official said. City officials say the additional work now required by the Corps will cost Dallas at least $50 million. Dallas recently spent about $1 million on levee area tree removal required by the Corps, although the Corps is now saying maybe trees help levees, not hurt them. But that $1 million is gone now, you see. That's what happens when you spend it. It goes. I'm sure the Corps understands that. Since the waters from this spring's floods on the Mississippi River receded, officials have identified places where the Mississippi River tried to carve out new channels and change course. The Mississippi tried to cut through river bends and remove parts from islands during the historic flood. That's what a river does. The river tore out a half-mile-wide chunk of land on an island in Memphis and left water and flocks of geese on a place where cotton formerly grew. Now, Corps officials estimate it will cost $225 million to undo the damage caused by the river as it tried to create new channels. That's in addition to the $327 million it will take to fix flood-damaged levees, the $157 million worth of flood-related dredging needed, and the estimated $70 million required to restore spillways. The House approved $1 billion in emergency appropriations for the Corps. The Senate has not approved any funds. If the Corps, Congress doesn't provide any money, the Corps will kill the... No, the Corps will have to shift funds it already has to pay for the work, meaning that Dallas will have to pay more money to the Corps for the thing, to make up for the thing in the other place. But, you know, let us try. And now, no, don't do that. Do this.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet.
See, I heard you made a mistake there.
I did.
But nobody blames you.
Oh, they blame me. They blame me big time. Addy, the Adam, is here, taunting me. Tokyo Electric Power has been handing out about 2 billion yen, that's about $28 million a year, as you well know, in unpublicized payments to local governments near its nuclear facilities, sources now say. The large sums in taxes and public grants paid by the firm to local communities are public knowledge. The full scale of its additional anonymous giving has not been previously revealed. One TEPCO executive said, "We paid the donations because we wanted to obtain the understanding of local governments on the construction of nuclear power plants. We did not disclose the amounts of the donations because we wanted to avoid criticism that we had collusive relations with local authorities." Which, apparently, according to the first half of that statement, they did. Dateline Covert, Michigan. Loss of water in a system that cools the reactor at Palisades nuclear plant there required the plant be shut down on Friday. Operators declared a notification of unusual event, which means nothing at all. It's the lowest of 4 emergency classification levels. That means that plant workers have been notified and are working to resolve the issue. Officials state there's been no release of radioactive material into the environment. And if you don't believe them, the United States cannot fully account for more than 16,000 kilograms, that's about 17 tons, of weapons-grade uranium and plutonium that we, the United States, have shipped to 27 friendly countries in recent decades, and it lacks any coherent policy to track down the materials, according to the Government Accountability Office. According to those auditors, the country's atomic accounting is so shoddy that the IAEA could potentially fine the United States in violation of its international anti-proliferation treaty obligations. The United States has lost track of enough fissile material to make hundreds of nuclear warhead cores. Friendly countries, you know, like Pakistan. Dateline Tokyo, the Japanese government initially underestimated radiation releases from Fuk, in part because of untimely rain, and it so exposed people unnecessarily, according to a Japanese government research institute's report this week. Who would think that any government would understate radiation in an accident? The head of radiation meteorology and nuclear safety at Kyoto University, Hiroaki Koide, says, "I believe there is a possibility that massive amounts of radioactive materials will be released into the environment again at Fuk. Partly because of the amount of water slushed down on the reactors in the early days." So, more bad to come, possibly, according to at least one expert.
Yeah, but that's only one.
It's a good point, Addie. It's a very, very good point. Clean, cheap, safe, too wonderful to meter.
I'm gone.
I know. He shows up and then he gets unhappy about this. Ladies and gentlemen, McAfee, a internet security organization, has named the most dangerous celebrity on the internet, and it is Heidi Klum. She's been crowned most dangerous celebrity, which found that nearly one out of every 10 searches for her on the internet puts people at risk of ending up on rigged websites hiding harmful computer viruses. Search keywords such as Heidi Klum free downloads, Heidi Klum videos, and Heidi Klum hot pictures put users at risk of running into online threats such as spyware, adware, spam, and phishing attacks designed to steal personal information. Klum also provides crafty criminals with attractive bait to lure victims to compromised websites, photos, and videos. Victims' computers can become infected by downloading or even simply clicking on these corrupt files. Klum edged out last year's winner, Cameron Diaz, holding now the second spot on McAfee's list. The list also includes Piers Morgan, Jessica Biel, Mila Kunis, Scarlett Johansson, Brad Pitt, and others. The more troubled the star, apparently, the less risk he or she poses online. Charlie Sheen only ranks 59th on the list. Hot movies and TV shows, awards, and industry accolades seem to be more of a factor than headline-grabbing activity, says McAfee's director of web security. So, Heidi Klum, ladies and gentlemen, most dangerous celebrity on the web. But she's taking steps.
This week on Project Scamway.
Designers, this is Prince Mboyi from Nigeria. He really is a prince, it says so, right on his blog. His challenge is this. He needs a makeover in his whole stealth internet marketing approach. Your challenge, design and execute before Interpol finds him.
Designing an email template that could look trustworthy and yet have some edge. Oh, God. That was a two Tylenol challenge.
I used a real Visa logo for authenticity, and then I played a little bit with the colors. I think I may have f***ed up big time.
Designers, the goal is to catch the eye, as well as to instill confidence. That's the name of the game, almost literally. People aren't going to send Prince Mboyi money just because he's writing to them in a kicky font. Trey, I'm perplexed. What were you thinking with the pirate motif?
Fun and honesty. That's really my design credo.
Trey, can I be blunt? Not in this lifetime. Oh, can I say lifetime? come on, designers. If you make it work, Prince Mboye doesn't have to work.
I knew Gerald had Nigerian relatives, so I was behind the eight ball to start with. And his website design was so AOL third reboot.
Designers, only one more hour before your work goes live online. Final touches, last licks.
Gerald, if I was your customer, I would like what you did with the pole dancing dollar bills. Very forward, very structured, and yet very loose. But I am not your customer.
Hi, I'm Tim, and I'm very concerned that you not miss Project Scamway's season premiere with special guest Prince Mboye this week, all week, on Bravo After Dark. It's the BAD channel.
Nothing's right without you. Nothing feels right anymore. The sun is at my window. The dark is knocking at my door. If I could just find the simple things, the kind of things that used to be enough for me. Your memory clings, it stings, it dims the day for me. You're always beside me, there to remind me. Nothing really matters. It only matters when you're here. Sometimes takes an ocean to make those feelings very clear. And if I could just go a million miles away and hide from myself, you would still find me. I can't deny that leaving you behind me hurts. And yet I know now. You are inside me, here to remind me that nothing's right without you. Nothing feels right anymore.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry. Sorry.
Deadline Iowa City, Iowa. The University of Iowa has apologized for a joke on a school Twitter feed that appeared to refer to Republican presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann as a cougar. Retired Brigadier General Julius Maada Bio of Sierra Leone has apologized for crimes committed by his junta in the 1990s, fleecing millions of dollars in shady military contracts, money laundering, torture, and the execution of political opponents. Coincidentally, he's running for president. Serena Williams has apologized for her latest outbursts at the U.S. Open Tennis Championships in New York. Quote, my emotions did get the best of me this past weekend when I disagreed with the umpire. It has been a long road to get back to the U.S. Open this year. I'm thankful. She was cited for a code violation and fined $2,000 for verbally abusing chair umpire Eva Azdursky. After being accused of repeated acts of plagiarism and stripped of a major prize, newspaper columnist Johan Hari apologized for his misconduct. He was a top columnist in a British newspaper and a frequent blogger for the Huffington Post when in July he was suddenly charged with having lifted large chunks of material from an Afghan activist's book and passed them off as portions of his interview with that activist. Hari denied having plagiarized. He was suspended by the newspaper while they did an internal review. He now admits the central accusations made against him. He blamed sheer ignorance. He also confessed to writing slanderous Wikipedia entries about colleagues who had criticized him. The mayor of Paterson, New Jersey, went to Washington to explain how back-to-back floods have left his city desperate for disaster relief, and now has to backtrack after saying how desperation could lead to terrorism. He said, the way people feel when their government refuses to help them, quote, kind of explains, at least to me, why those who lay claim to terrorism in these United States feel that they can, unquote. He now says he was not suggesting a lack of aid would lead to a terrorist attack. He'd had little sleep before he came to Washington, and he meant that people could lose hope. He's now sorry. Organizers of the National September 11th Memorial have apologized for a spelling mistake in one of the victim names etched into bronze panels and promised to correct the error as early as this week. An MTV star? Ugh, nope. Monday Night Football analyst Ron Jaworski had to apologize on air after accidentally cursing during his commentary, talking about an incomplete pass by Dolphins quarterback Chad Henne in their loss to the Patriots on ESPN. Jaworski casually uttered an expletive before saying, you have to get rid of this ball. He apologized for the gaffe later in the fourth quarter. Suggestions on what the expletive might have been, always welcome at the Harry Shearer. Jakarta, Indonesia, Governor Fauzi Bowo says he's sorry for telling women to avoid rape by wearing provocative clothing on public transportation. My apologies. My previous statement is prone to misunderstanding. I don't mean at all to degrade women. I condemn the rapes. A Forever 21 shirt with the words allergic to algebra on it has drawn criticism. It's been withdrawn by the company with apologies. Our merchandise is intended to appeal to all audiences, not to offend them, says Linda Chang. We would like to apologize to our customers as our intent was not to discredit education, and we're taking the proper actions necessary. Apparently, you'll have to take down more than one shirt. One reads school, S-K-O-O-L, sucks. Forever 21. I always wondered whether that's supposed to be a curse or not. I condemn you to be forever 21. Ed Balls, yes, he's in the Labour Party in Britain, says he's deeply sorry for the previous Labour government's role in the banking crisis. I just wanted you to hear the name, because you can be in politics with a name like that in Britain. The chairman of the Toronto District School Board has apologized for a controversial list of days of significance that appeared in school agendas sent home with students as young as 5 years old. The list included International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers, December 17th, and Day of Zero Tolerance on Female Genital Cutting Mutilation, February 6th. Another 9/11 controversy in Washington Township, New Jersey. It's the names of local politicians on the memorial, not victims. The city official, whose name I can't, Mayor Samir El-Bassioni, has now apologized. The stone was removed early Wednesday. The mayor takes full responsibility. That's nice. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Hypothetical mini theater. how life would be if life were different. Act 3, if Barack Obama were a backseat driver.
Well, isn't this great, honey? It's the two of us driving through the countryside. Could you make it a little cooler?
Sure, baby.
You sure that wasn't the turnoff?
Honey, the GPS says it wasn't. I think it's sure.
Okay.
It's... that guy just pulled in right in front of me.
Mm.
You okay?
No, I'm fine. But let me tell you something, honey.
Okay, but I'm trying to...
I want you to pass that Buick. Do it now. What are you waiting for? Pass that Buick.
All right.
Hypothetical mini theater. Life subjuncticated.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast, think of it, at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like... me having an end to this sentence. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Already, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Actually, it was a clause, not a sentence. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii and Chicago desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. And information on where you can see The Big Uneasy, including on demand on cable, available right now at TheBigUneasy.com. Email address of this broadcast and a list of the music played here on, always available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.